Hello and welcome to the Tartar STEM podcast with your host Mark Mayer. This is episode 280, and what a fine occasion it is. Once again, after a poor midweek defeat, we come into the podcast off the back of a fantastic win away at Swansea. 3-2, Andy Carroll and Danny Drinkwater on the score sheet, along with Tom Delibashiri. We'll get into that in the recap. We'll also have the mailbag, news bites and big match preview later. And to talk all of that with me, two of the finest minds that Tartar STEM has to offer. First up, a man who's came over for the Nottingham Forest and Sheffield United games. It's Marco Bader from Germany. How's it going, mate?
Yeah, hi, Mark. Nice to be here again. And yeah, I've not only been to the Sheffield United game, but as well to the one on Saturday against Forest. So yeah, even though we couldn't get a win, it was good to be back and I fully enjoyed it.
Absolutely. And Ben Thomas as well, someone a bit more regular for the Dolan stand, is with us as well this evening. How's it going, mate?
Yeah, it's going well, Mark. It's been another crazy week in Reading, hasn't it, really? So lots to talk about. But a lot happier with the win yesterday, definitely. We're all carol singing now, aren't we? So that's the main thing.
Yeah, certainly. It's a nice community activity, isn't it? The carol singing and Reading. Yeah, we'll get onto it in just a minute. But certainly almost the typical week of being a Reading fan this season, it feels like, to start off with the home game and just feel like it's just, you know, drifted past us and just not gone our way. And then you go away and just think, oh, well, it's not really going to click for us. And suddenly it does. And everything's, you know, right and rosy again. That's definitely happened a few times this season. So let's get into the recap in just a second. Before we do that, as always, a big thanks to our sponsors, ZCZ Films, and our Patreon subscribers. So let's get into the week's action then in the recap.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
So let's kick off then with Sheffield United. And Marco, this is your first visit, obviously because of pandemic and everything. You're saying it's your first visit since 2018 to the newly crowned Select Car Leasing Stadium. Aside from the game, I thought it'd be just interesting to hear some of your thoughts on, you know, what you made of the being around the stadium and everything, what might have changed in those sort of few years. How was it for both games and being back in the stadium?
Well, yeah, like I said, I fully enjoyed it. It was always the feeling of, well, would say, but football-wise, coming back to your second home. And it was great to feel, experience the atmosphere again, and wasn't the even Dolan stand. So watching the Royals get on the pitch, and there are still these little things that make you happy, even though maybe the performance on the pitch is not the best. Just listening in when the team went out to get the pre-match preparation, to listen to the Royals anthem, to just experience what I was just watching online for more than 2 years. It was just great.
Definitely. And as a game, I mean, the Sheffield United one, it just felt like it didn't ever really begin for us, Ben. It just was one of those games that just passed us by so much. And I wonder whether that was because Sheffield United They played a different game to Forest. Forest were happy to kind of get the ball forward, and that meant we knew what to do with it. But Sheffield United held possession quite well. They obviously got their goal, which I wasn't too pleased about. But Reading it just never felt like Reading got going in this game.
Well, I think, you know, we've always been really positive on this podcast about the manager and, you know, pro Paulo and kind of supporting him. But, you know, the team selection on paper looked all right, but the minute they set foot on a pitch, the formation, I mean, I think I described it in the column or the player ratings, which were really well received. I never get for a game like that. But it was just like midfield musical chairs. It was just all over the place, and we were just set up all wrong. You know, we were playing a team that have not had a good season, really, are not great at all. Obviously, it subsequently sacked their manager, even though they beat us 1-0 a couple of days later. But there was just no attacking urgency whatsoever. It was too interchangeable in midfield, too much swapping around. It was far too fluid, and we never got control of the game. Didn't have much of the ball at all, really. And you know, ended up losing the game. I think the first half generally as a football spectacle was dire, really, really dire. They obviously got the goal second half, and then, you know, we'll talk about it in a little bit, but the awful incident with Fleck, which was just horrendous, really, absolutely horrendous. And it kind of just sucked the life out of everything. And it all sort of became a bit meaningless, really. But, you know, up until that point, we should have been in the game more. We should have got a foothold more. I think Palmer should have been a lot more positive with the substitutions. Maybe bringing on Carroll at halftime would have been a better shout, potentially, to kind of, you know, try and force the issue a little bit more. But very, very collectively, very, very poor. And frustratingly for me, doing the ratings, there wasn't, you know, being honest, there wasn't anyone who was absolutely horrific in performances. It was just very, very stale. And I think ultimately it does lie with the manager that game, particularly because it's the same group of players. They were just set up all wrong to kind of go about trying to get a result out of the game. So very, very disappointing, really, all round, and not a good night on reflection at all with everything else that happened. So yeah, it was vital that we sort of, you know, bounced back yesterday, which we did, thankfully.
Yeah. I mean, that Fleck thing, obviously it's now a few days have passed and it all does seem to be okay. But yeah, it definitely was just not a very pleasant thing to have happened or anything like that. And it was, yeah, just it's even been kind of mired in kind of like anti-vaxxer COVID stuff, which is just not pleasant at all. So it's just a horrific thing to have happened, really. And obviously it's now been hopefully sorted, and hopefully whatever any kind of issues or anything like that he has is dealt with. And Reading, then, we've done this before this season. You look back over the games, we've had the kind of defeat to Derby. I remember that everyone was kind of, oh, that was just a non-performance. And then after that, we went and won. We lost to Millwall not so long ago, and then went and won at Birmingham. And this feels like the same kind of thing. It's just when this Reading team looks almost like they played their most disappointing games of the season, not even their most revoltingly awful, but just dull, just limp performances, then they managed to pull it out the bag. And this Swansea game, I mean, it's our first league win in 14 meetings with Swansea since September 2008, which I think was like Noel Hunt and Stephen Hunt and all those sort of players were playing that day. That just shows how long ago that was. First away league win since 2001. Marco, this is a game we weren't expected to do very well. Swansea had faced the fewest shots at home in the league before facing us for the entire season. They conceded 2 goals in 7 games. What did Reading do to manage to score 3 goals against this team?
Well, sometimes it seems like this kind of games where we're not supposed to be the favourites seem to be a bit easier for us. And yeah, I mean, out of the two home games against Forest and Sheffield, you would have expected like 4 to 6 points, no? And so you knew you had to perform, you knew you had to get the point, whereas when we went to Swansea, I suppose everyone would have been happy with a draw. And I think that's also one thing in terms of the players. I mean, you always need a good mixture. And of course, now everyone can say, yeah, because Moore and Ajara didn't play, that might have been also some kind of reason. And I think, yeah, like, for example, Ajara is definitely a player of good quality, fantastic technique, and always capable of yeah, getting some or doing something, some magic in order to let us score. But on the other hand, if he's not into the match, sometimes he feels like just a loss, a player that we are having player less. So and on the other hand, players like Tom Holmes, for example, where you can just be sure that he will put in 100% or even more on the pitch, and maybe that was exactly what we needed. So I have the same opinion like Ben, so the tactics on Tuesday Well, I didn't really know what kind of system that was, but I think you have to highlight also that Paunu was able to change that. I don't know how to fall, to which point he knew that maybe his tactics weren't the right one, against on Tuesday, but he changed that for Saturday. He put it right. And I think apart from the fact that the tactics on Tuesday might have been a bit strange, I think it's also always a bit to the players, how they perform. I mean, the system is important, tactics are important, but if you're not putting 100% on the pitch, then you probably won't win the game, doesn't matter which system you're playing. And I think that was also different on Saturday. The attitude was a lot better. Everyone was fighting and they were fighting for each other. So yeah, I think that were the main things that made us beat Swansea.
Yeah, we'll definitely get onto the attitude aspect in a minute, but just to pick up on a few of your points there, the fact that Ajari and Moore were out, I mean, I suppose if you were to be unkind and ask Reading fans which two players would you not mind being injured after the Sheffield United game, a lot of people probably would have said Moore and Ajari. And there were stats that went on the Stylist and Twitter that showed that Reading don't actually concede any more or any fewer goals when Moore's not in the team, but they do pick up more points. And that perhaps is a sense of, yeah, I wouldn't want to necessarily say that's because Moore's not in the team. Maybe that's correlation more than causation. And for Ajari, he's just a player that unfortunately just hasn't kicked on this season. And I remember saying at the start of the year that with the injuries and with the quality of the Reading team and the transfer situation, we needed a player like Ajari to kick on and be almost an Elise replacement. And he's just not done that. If anything, he's not been as good as he was last year, and he wasn't as good as the year before. So, you know, those two guys not being in did mean that Tom Holmes came back in. Holmes was quite harshly dropped for the Sheffield United game, I felt. And Reading really just, when we talk about tactics, Reading just sat in. We had 26.5% of possession, committed 12 fouls to 4, 9 shots we had to 19. But Ben, this is actually, that doesn't quite show the entire picture, because we blocked 8 shots to their 0 and 10 of their 14 shots in the second half weren't even from inside the area. So that solid foundation, yes, obviously, you know, with that amount of possession and that amount of shots, Swansea probably could have taken a point or won the game on a different day. But there was enough of a foundation there for Reading to go and get 3 goals, you know, build out from the back and just have a game plan and really know what we had to do with the game. And with that, we managed to pull it off.
Yeah, I mean, it was reminiscent of the Cardiff game, wasn't it, early in the season, where we just absorbed, you know, a hideous amount of pressure and kind of weathered the amount of shots that they had on the day. You know, obviously different scoreline, but same result. And I think where I've just criticised, you know, Panovic for Tuesday's mess, it was eye raising, the kind of the eyebrow raising the players that he put in on yesterday, but also the formation that he went for. I think if Moore and Ajari are genuinely injured, that's very fortuitous, because you know they were not good on Tuesday, and they've not been good for a little while. You know, I said last week when I was on, I hate this kind of scapegoating of individual players. You know, if it's not Puskas, it's Moore. If it's not Moore, it's Ajari, and so on and so on. But, you know, it's a collective responsibility. And I think that's not just the players on the pitch. That's kind of the manager in the dugout as well. And I think it was lucky for him that they were injured, because he would have had a tough call keeping them in and justifying their place, because they've not been good at all, really. You know, Tom Holmes needs to play games at this age now. He needs to play games to potentially get a new contract at the end of this year. You know, Halilovic coming back is a positive thing at this time, because we need more attacking threat. But the difference for me yesterday, and he's been unsung for so many games and you know, so unsung, he's almost been anonymous for positive reasons, is Loren. You know, you stick him in that screen, you know you're going to get a lot of work going backwards and forwards, you know, side to side, just in that little area in front of the front of the centre-backs. So he was massive yesterday. Obviously, Tom was out, you know, just fantastic. I think he was man of the match in the end. But his work rate yesterday was unbelievable. And I think really that, you know, we although we conceded two goals, which were probably avoidable, we weathered it again. We absorbed it. And this is the frustrating thing. And I get it from Reading fans' point of view, is that how can we turn in a performance like that at home to a team that really probably should have been beaten, with all due respect to Sheffield United, and then go to Swansea, who were in a kind of a good run of form, you know, good crowd behind them, you know, good attacking threat, you know, scored a lot of goals this season, Swansea, and get a result like that. It's baffling, really, absolutely baffling. And I think, you know, to go for a week where we've had a draw, a loss and a win, it just sums us up at the moment. And I think with the players coming back, we really now need to see some identity from this team and some really solid, you know, groundwork with the formation, and go, this is what we want to play. This is the players we need to fit, you know. Same with Marco. I love Ajaria, but at the moment he doesn't fit into the systems that we're trying to play. Would he have fitted into that system yesterday had he been fit? Yeah, he probably would have had a good game. You know, think about Fulham away. He was just fantastic that day. Absolutely tore it up. But we don't see that for long stretches. And again, this is kind of symptomatic of this team, where we're putting a few good performances and then be anonymous and lose games for the next five or six. So it is very difficult, really. And I'm just hoping now that with these players coming back, Carroll up top, you know, that's given us a massive list, scored on his kind of first start. Very good yesterday in terms of holding the ball and stretching their defence. So hopefully this will be the start of something where we can, you know, look up towards, you know, where we want to be, really. Time will tell. Obviously, we know that with this team, but it is important that we keep giving the fans a lift and they keep getting points on the board to kind of pull us away from the bottom three.
Well, let's finish off the recap then by talking about big man Andy up top. And it's just it was almost typical. I don't know if you guys have seen the video that has been gone online. I think it's a Swansea YouTuber fan who filmed himself while the game goes on, and he basically films himself going, "Oh, not in Andy Carroll again," and all this sort of stuff. And it's just hilarious. The footballing world, it was only the English footballing world, suddenly stands up and takes notice when Andy Carroll scores a goal for Reading. But from, you know, kind of from a obviously a non-banter point of view, Marco, from a tactical point of view, who does it work most for, like Andy Carroll being in the team? Does it suit kind of Swift and Halilovic and these kind of technical players? Or is it actually, I mean, Deli Bashiru had a really good game going forward on Saturday, hit the posts, obviously scored. You know, he was involved a lot more because he's got that pace and he can get involved in the kind of counter-attacks that Carroll can produce. Who does it suit in the team, or maybe not suit for him to be up front like he is?
Basically, I think it helps mainly everyone on the pitch, because he's able to hold the ball and he's able to defend the ball also against two defenders maybe. And that's important, because once he controls the ball, he can hold it. He gives the other players around him time to get forward. And I think that's probably something that, I mean, of course, Puskas is a different player and his strength is not exactly that part to defend the ball against two other players. So many times I think with him, that's something similar that we've seen before with Lucas Joao. He's a bit stronger, so he can defend the ball against others, and that gives the other players around him, doesn't matter who, like Halilovic, like Swift, time to get forward too. So I think in general, it gives us more options up front. And, well, we've always talked also about if maybe Carroll might get the best out of Puskas. Might be the case. But still, you have to have in mind as well that you got then one player less in midfield. So it will depend on which opponent we will play against. But as it was for Saturday, I think it playing Carroll up front, he was very lively. He defended the ball well. And against a team like Swansea that were attacking pretty much but without really creating something, that helped us a lot, because our counter attacks were pretty dangerous, And thanks to Carroll also, we were able to get forward with two or three passes. We could get ourselves into a dangerous area. So, I think his play mainly helps everyone around him. If it's a left wing, right wing, or if it's like Swift, for example, I think that helps everyone who has to get forward.
And let's talk about that celebration as well. It's such a great sight to see. It's been claimed that he's basically done. Carroll's kind of done the celebration he's done because Paunovic supposedly, and I stress this has been unconfirmed because I personally can't quite imagine it, but Paunovic sits on the floor in the dressing room and starts miming a rowboat because everyone needs to be in the same boat and all that sort of stuff. And it's kind of pre-match the speech, and it's just such a hilarious thing for me, Ben, because I just enjoy the idea of having Andy Carroll up front. It just means, and it's kind of the shithouse tactics that Reading have only really been good at when we've got, like, you know, when Jason Roberts was kind of good at it, I guess. Jimmy Kebbe did it a little bit as well. And the best Reading teams do have a little bit of it about them. And to be honest, it's not something that as a club we've done very well over the years. We've not been that sort of team. But when you've got Andy Carroll up front and you can do these sort of stupid celebrations and get these wins that annoy people and everything, it's just a bit more fun, isn't it? I'm not saying I want the club to do that forever and, you know, get a reputation for it, but just every now and again, it's just sort of takes the seriousness out of it, doesn't it? It's just a bit silly.
Mark, are you swearing because we're past the watershed now when we're recording this? Is that what's happening?
Hey, I think it's probably in the dictionary, that term now. It's so common in football.
Okay, fine. That's good. Okay, all right. I wanted to check because I didn't know if we were going to get like an explicit rating for this or not. Look, we've said it a lot, and there's been a lot of column inches written about Andy Carroll, but he's given everyone a lift. And right now, I honestly don't care what that looks like, because we all, as Reading fans, we need something to cling on to. And if it's Andy Carroll sitting on the floor, rowing a boat in South Wales after he scored a goal, then I will take that, you know, all of the time. I think, you know, I agree with what Marco was saying about him in terms of a player. I think the one thing with Carroll is that the players around him know what he's capable of at his absolute best. And they know that if they do certain things for him and give the ball to him in a certain way, he's going to end up doing what he did yesterday. And the problem is that we've, as Reading fans and as the players in the team currently, they don't know what Puskas is capable of when he's at his absolute best. So they don't know what to do with him, really. And there was that bizarre situation a couple of weeks ago where it was like no one was actually passing to him at all because he just didn't trust him to do anything with it. But, you know, I think the Carroll is almost the complete opposite. I get what you're saying about the Jason Roberts sort of slight comparison. I still believe that Jason Roberts pretty much single-handedly got us promoted that year, because when he came in January, it just gave everyone a lift and he was just superb, absolutely superb. With Carroll, the key thing is that he stays in the team, he stays fit and he scores. And ultimately, he stays beyond January, because at the moment, we've only got him for another 2 months. So he could be in this ridiculous situation where he ends up on a hot streak and goes, no, I'm all right, I'll go somewhere else. Which would be absolute peak Reading, wouldn't it? So, you know, it is good to have him there. It's good to see him kind of enjoying what he's doing. He clearly wanted to come back and play football. He's chosen us for whatever reason. And you know, yesterday it looked good. Will that continue on Saturday? Let's hope so. But the key thing now, as I said, is just consistency. Getting those players in the starting 11 to perform week in, week out, you know, game in, game out, and just keep focusing on getting the points on the board. And that's all we can hope for at the moment. I thought the celebration was brilliant. And I think, had it been at the Select Car leasing, I probably would have gone ballistic, because it's just not something that you want to see as a home fan, really. So, yeah, it was great, and it was good that a lot of people were involved. And if that story, as you alluded to, is true, it's just bonkers. It's just absolutely insane, even given the kind of season we've had. So, it's baffling and hilarious and crazy all in the same breath, really.
Yeah, it's exactly the sort of stuff that you're very happy to happen when you're winning. That's it. Like, you can get away with it. And that's the thing. Like, I'm just happy for Reading to get away with it and to win and to do it in a bit of style. I mean, ultimately, what the result did is it meant that we're 21st now. It's a bit sobering, really, looking at the table. Because if, I mean, even if we'd not got the points deduction, would be 14th. So I mean, it's not exactly gonna, I don't think there's millions of difference in prize money, so long as you stay up and you're not, you know, not fighting relegation too much. We're 4 points clear of the drop zone, so it's very important in that. We've got Hull next to a 1 point above us, so you know, it's I suppose the table does have a strong amount of irrelevance as long as Reading aren't in the relegation zone at the moment. But we'll get onto the whole game in a little bit. We've got the mailbag coming up, so let's hear from Veljko Paunović first, and then we'll get into what you've been asking us this week.
Superb performance, superb win, fantastic cohesion on the field, fantastic cohesion with our fans who came today in a big number. Thank you for that, and I think it's a great moment for us to build momentum, to build on top of the team performance, also to bring the pieces together. I think we had very happy for Drinkwater's goal, very happy for every goal obviously, but for Drinkwater's goal, his first for our side, very happy for Andy's goal, and the performances from the team. There is no from the players who most of them play today with a lot of knocks, with a lot of issues, physical issues, but were capable to put out a fantastic physical performance. So, yeah, very happy for that, and very grateful to the team for this effort.
For all the latest Reading news, analysis and opinion, visit the website at thetilehurstend.com.
So first up then, and just on that point, Ben, that you'd be making, actually, David saying, you'll have to phrase this better than I can, but how can we be so absolutely shocking one half, yet sublime the next? How can we get consistency, not only from the team, but also the fans? Well, I mean, you ain't going to get any consistency from any online fan base. Certainly, with a team such as Reading that is by nature inconsistent. I think the simple answer to this is that we are just an inconsistent mid-table championship team, especially with the injuries and everything. And, you know, the club, you look at the lineup and everything that's been out this week is basically the same 11 players, barring kind of, you know, obviously Carroll and stuff, that have been available for the last, you know, three, four weeks. You know, Halilovic and Deli Bashir have come in, Ajari and Moore go out. But then, you know, this is kind of what we've got at the moment. You look at the bench, again, players like Kamara, Tete, Ashcroft, they're not getting on because Paunović doesn't think that they're going to suit being backs against the wall against a team like Swansea. So great to see Aziz back on the bench. Puskas came on because he was the only one left. Like, that's just how it is for Reading. They're inconsistent. You look at the teams that are in the mid-table of the Championship at the moment, you'd say exactly the same. Middlesbrough, Birmingham, Luton, Nottingham Forest, all these teams are inconsistent, and that's why they're mid-table. So I just think that that's the fundamental fact for Reading this year. It's almost like, I don't know how you feel about it, Marco. Do you feel that it's something that this team can shake off this season, or do you just think that, you know, kind of like me, that it's almost like a facts of life is the way that I see it?
Well, I would say that part of this inconsistency is also that we haven't been pretty much able to play with the same lineup for more than two or three games. So due to the injuries and many other reasons. So it would be interesting. I'm really hopeful that hopefully we will be able to play the same lineup maybe during the whole month of December. That would be interesting to see also how we perform if we keep on playing the same lineup. And I think that's also that will definitely have a big influence on our performances on the field, and also the way how we can explain them. Because whenever you have to change the lineup, then you could say, yeah, maybe we didn't perform that good due to these changes. But so I'm really looking forward to see us play 2, 3, 4 games with the same lineup. And by saying that, it will be also interesting to see how Paunović will handle a return from Ajari and Moore, because, let's hope we can play with the same lineup against Hull. If we do well against them, and of for the next game, maybe Moore and Ejaria would be available, then it might be just a difficult thing to leave them on the bench. And yeah, but well, of course, as you said, this consistency that we need, that's something we have to solve just to get at this up in the table and to leave some distance to the relegation zone. Of course, the inconsistency may be part of or might reflect the quality we got, but I think it's also part of the fact that we just had so many injury problems. So playing with the same lineup will hopefully have also a positive impact on our consistency.
Yeah, no, it's a good point about the injuries. And with, you know, you look at a team, for example, like West Ham in the Premier League, obviously, I think they've used the least amount of players for the entire season. And look where it's got them. If they had the injury problems that we had, then they would not be the top four of the Premier League. So it's a good point to make. I think, yeah, if we had João, Mate and everyone fit, I mean, it's certainly almost a topic you could have an entire podcast on as to what the season would be like with those players. But I think maybe in terms of them getting back, we just have to see where we are in the table. I mean, we're 12 points off the playoffs now, which you'd think it would be a bit of a mammoth task to come up with something like that this season. So we'll just see how it goes. But Matthew Hopkins saying, why are we playing balls in behind for target man like Carroll and not for Puskas? When I first read this question, I kind of thought it might be confidence, is that Reading, you know, don't want to hit the ball long for Puskas. But actually, having thought about this, and, you know, I was watching Carroll obviously within 10 in the Forest game, and also, you know, in the other game since then, that he demands the ball at every opportunity. He is someone who thinks, you know, you've got the ball, I don't care that I'm a target man, I will go in behind, I will stretch the defence, I will make that run. And that's probably the difference between a Championship target man and a Premier League target man, is to play for England, you have to be able to make the runs that stretch defences and you know, have good control of the ball, like we saw for his goal against Swansea. Immaculate control of the ball. You still have to have all that, even if you are a target man. And Ben, that's the difference, isn't it? Is that Puskas doesn't have those things to almost be like a multi-talented striker. And also, and I don't think that he makes the runs to say, you have to give me the ball. He doesn't point and run and say, you've got to do it now. And Andy Carroll does do that. And that, you know, someone like Drinkwater, who can pick a pass, if he sees the man running, he'll do it. It doesn't. If Puskas did that, I'm sure they'd have given the passes to him, but he just didn't give them the option as much.
I think the other thing is, well, he scares defences, doesn't he? You know, his goal is typical of that. You know, I can't remember which defender it was, but the Swansea guy tried to push him on the outside and couldn't. And Carroll still bullied him through the middle and then shot and obviously, you know, had the goal out of it. I mean, if his name is on the team sheet, he is going to provoke some kind of emotional reaction from the defenders that he's facing because of his career, because of his stature, because of his capabilities, because of his size. Because of everything he's got. And I think we will learn, you know, when he first joined, everyone was like, well, we've got to start putting crosses in the box. Well, actually, if you do your research, he's got very good feet. And I hate to go Sky from the mid-90s here, but he's got very good feet for a big man. Because he will play it on the deck and he will run at people. But, you know, we could talk to death about the kind of balls that the strikers have been receiving, but ultimately, if they score a goal out of it, it doesn't matter. I think it's going to be an adjustment for some of those players. I think Swift has, say, struggled, but he's kind of gone off the boil a little bit, really. And I know he sort of had a reasonable game yesterday, but they're going to have to adjust in the way that they play the ball and. With Puskas, it was kind of, there was a lot of hit and hope and right, you know, you chase that because you're quick, but you know that he's not going to be able to hold the ball up. Carroll will do that. You know, as Marco said, in the same vein as kind of João did last season. So it will be interesting to see how those players adapt. But I think the key thing with Carroll is that we've got options. You know, we don't have to play balls to him on the floor. We can cross it in, vice versa. You know, let him bully the defence for once and kind of get at them and really start to create some chances. How that develops into a footballing ethos, I don't know. I really don't know. But the main thing for us is that he just scores goals, and that's the bottom line, really.
Yeah, I'm just starting to think, actually, the idea of Carroll and Zhao up front together, I mean, I don't even know how that would work. I can't even begin to think how that would work. Good luck. I mean, good luck, Paolo. I suppose it's you play one for 70 minutes, then you have one for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
So answers on a postcard for that. What team would people play if everyone was fit? And how would you do it? Definitely is a topic we'll be coming up to, hopefully, in the next few weeks. Sean Burgess saying 4 points from Forest, Sheffield United and Swansea, albeit two home games, that really isn't awful, all things considered. What are we hoping for from the next four? We've got Hull, West Brom, Luton and Peterborough. Would you take 7 points now if offered that? I think ultimately I probably would take that because Hull actually, we'll get onto this, but Hull actually on very good form. West Brom are third in the league. Luton are no mugs. And Peterborough, I mean, that's a game you've got to win fundamentally, even if it is away from home on Boxing Day. That's just the sort of game you've got to, you know, you've got to be a bit ruthless for. And I think, you know, 7 points for that, Marco, I don't know if you'd say it is a sort of a situation where we have got to go and get lots of wins or something, but I think that's pretty... 7 points from that would be roughly all right.
Well, honestly, having in mind how often our performance or the quality of our performance has changed, it's pretty difficult to predict. And I don't know if I would have been happy with 7 points. Well, definitely that doesn't look so bad. But even if that sounds a bit boring, I would just be happy if we could beat Hull first. So and starting there, I think if we could beat them, that will give us another confidence boost. But on the other hand, we never know what happens during the week. I remember many matches where I was hopeful that okay, next week we are able to bring the same lineup, and then we had two or three players injured and everything changed. And I would say that it definitely makes an impact if you have a bench where you can bring at least two or three senior players with some kind of experience. And so, well, yeah, 7 points would be nice, but I would first go with the Hull game. Very important that after the last two home games to get that win, also in terms of getting any the supporters furthermore behind the team. And yeah, and I think we've shown many times that we are also strong away from home. If we put in the right effort, if we have the right players on the pitch, and so I'm hopeful that we start with a win against Haaland. Then everything other will also depend a bit on which players are available. But yeah. First of all, I'm hopeful to get that win against Hull and get the same players out on the field that we did at Swansea.
Yeah, I think if we beat Hull, then suddenly 7 points isn't enough because yeah, you've got that loads of Luton and Peterborough games are certainly. I think you're looking at 4 points you need out of those as a minimum, really. To just, I mean, ultimately, if we're not that far away from relegation zone, we've got to push away from it. Final question then of the mailbag, and do always get your questions in to thetilestend@gmail.com and also the Twitter and Facebook. We always put out a question well in advance of doing the show, so always look out for that on that Sunday or Monday morning usually. Kyle Smith and Andy Taylor, kind of two similar questions. Kyle saying, which players do you expect, which ones do you hope to see move on next summer to help us meet our wage target? Andy Taylor saying, assuming Halilovic, Dan and Cow are well within our wage budget now, do you think they'll extend their time with us when their contracts end? Well, it's not, it's difficult to say these are the players who are definitely out of contracts because obviously this is from a resource. You know, I get you look on Transfer Market, which is just a website that kind of has a reasonable idea, obviously clocks what's been reported in the news. A lot of players could very easily have an option from the club or from the player or both to extend their contract. So we don't really know what we're dealing with. But the list of players as it stands now, they're out of contract at the end of the year. Swift, Rinomata, Lauren, Yeardom, Dan, Carroll, Hoylett, Holmes, Raphael, Halilovic, Morrison, Araruna, Bristow, Aziz. I'll pick up, I'm not going to go through all of those players because we'll be here all night, but I'll pick up a few of those players and just say, I do not expect Morrison to stay, particularly with his injury problems at the moment. Raphael, again, why with Southwood being engulfed the rest of the season, hopefully you wouldn't see any need for that. I'm quite optimistic that someone like Scott Dow, or even Yeardom, yeah, it's perfectly plausible that another year, if they're playing well, would stay. I suppose, Ben, the ones obviously, I mean, Swift is a conversation that I think there's not even much point having, but someone like Lauren hasn't had a great year. Someone like Aziz and these sort of players, Holmes as well. You have to think that with a lot of players going, and you know, maybe even someone like Swift goes in January, makes a bit of money there, there should be enough money to make sure that we're not kind of taking the mickey with these offers. And if you're Tom Holmes, would you go to somewhere like Nottingham Forest or whatever just for a change of scenery? Or would you actually just say, you know, I want to be first choice if I'm signing a contract and go from there? Because I don't think it's going to benefit someone like Aziz to leave at the end of the year.
Well, the Holmes is an easy one to do because it would be the same situation that McIntyre had in the summer. And clearly McIntyre felt that there was you know, green shoots and reasons to stay at the club. Obviously, he's injured now, which is really, really unfortunate. But, you know, it's the same with Tom Hans. I think he'll just look at it and go, well, look, I'm here. I've got a chance to be number one. I personally think that there'll be a serious discussion about more towards the end of this season. And you know, they might look at the contract and cancel it mutually, or we might find another deal somewhere. I don't know. I mean, I know he's still under contract, but I don't expect him to stay, really. I think it's that relationship is really soured with the fan base, and you know, it's been a very rocky few years for him. Morrison, I think he's played his last game for Reading, and I don't see him staying. Raphael will go. The key thing really is if Swift can pick up a bit more form, if we can get some money for him in January. And I think most Reading fans will be realistic about that. They'd probably rather sell him in January, especially if we're not pushing for the playoff places, you know, get some money for him, even if it's 2 or 3 million, than him sort of walk out the door for free in June, July, really. The Dan conversation is an interesting one. I think, you know, if he's enjoying it and he sees potential in this team, then yeah, why not? I mean, you know, he's made his money, he's had his career, but if he's still got the hunger and the desire, you know, this is as good a place as any. This is the kind of level that he's working at. And if he's settled and he's playing well, why not stick it out for another year? You know, don't have to sign huge contracts these days. With Rinomoto, I'd like him to stay. I think he's brilliant. Yeardom, again, is an interesting one. I think that depends on what happens with Moore, because they could turn around to him and go, look, we'll give you the captain's armband, you know, stick it out for another year. I just don't think the club are going to be in a position where they can keep handing out big contracts. I think those days are done, really.
It's on that topic. On that topic, do either of you, and I suppose jump in, are either of you confident that if Andy Carroll scores 4 goals or 5 goals, 6 goals, whatever, and he's really good for Reading in the next couple months, are either of you willing to say now that he will definitely stay, or are you more unconfident than confident that he would stay?
Well, it depends. You know, you might get a Premier League team that are seriously in trouble and go, right, well, we need a target man, let's go for him, and then he's well within his rights to just go, yeah, okay, see you later. I mean, again, it comes down to enjoyment, doesn't it? And I think yesterday was very telling in terms of the celebration. I know it's only a celebration, but already the players are behind him, they want to be involved with him, and they clearly like him sort of coming on and making a difference and playing. You just, without copping out, Mark, you just don't know. You really don't know what, you know, you talked about the next 4 games. Realistically, that could be anything. You know, we could lose against Hull, go and get a point at West Brom, go and beat Luton and lose to Peterborough. You know, you just don't know. And that's the difficult thing, is that there's so much uncertainty around this club at the moment with, you know, performances, consistency, formations, you know, contracts. It's very, very difficult. I would like, you know, particularly Carroll to stick it out for the season, because I think that's what this club needs. If he goes, we're back to this situation where we've got Puskas again, and that's just not working in this formation. And his confidence is completely shot anyway. So you know, from a supporter of Reading Football Club, I would prefer to see a goal threat stay in the team. But obviously, you know, it's his prerogative. I don't know what Marco thinks on that one.
Yeah, pretty much the same. I think if Carroll will continue to do as well as he did so far, I would love to think that it's a win-win situation for both for the player and for Reading. Because I mean, he found his way into the team. He seems to be happy being here around. The supporters are supporting him the best that they should could. So I think in the end, to continue to play and perform on that level until the end of the season should be positive for both the player and the club. I think it might be also an important fact to what point the club is able to offer him something. Because sometimes the player might show interest and willingness to stay, but if due to the economic situation, might not be able to offer him something quick and something, at least until the end of the season, then of course there might be other clubs that come into him and might offer him something. So I think the timing will be also important if we suppose that he will continue to do well. So might be important to offer Carroll also something as soon as possible if we are allowed to do so.
The final point I would is the under-23s are my big thing at the moment, because the club have got to get the appointment for the under-23s manager right. The next person that comes through the door, because obviously Ali's going, has got to be right, because there's going to be players in that team that are looking at and going, well, potentially we've got like 9, 10, 11 players out the door in the summer and I might be asked to step up. And they've got to be able to instill that mentality in those under-23s, because we could be in a situation that we can't bring people in, we can't spend money on players. We're going to be looking to the next generation of those under-23 players. And whoever comes in has got to be able to kind of get them playing consistently, get them set up in a particular way, because their results have been all over the place as well. But just go, look, this time next year, you could be in the starting 11 for the first team and you've got to step up now. We'll give you the tools that you need, but we've got to get a situation in this club where we've got players that are, almost ready to step into the first team, because that could be the situation that we're in. You know, feasibly, all of those players could go. There's no reason that any of them would stay potentially. So where do we go from there? And it's going to have to be the under-23s.
Yeah, well, that's certainly something that we'll have to keep an eye on. We'll go into news bites actually now, in fact, and tell you what's going on with the under-23s and talk about what's been going on around the club this week.
Keep up to date with all things Reading FC. Follow the Tilehurst End on Facebook and Twitter.
So as we mentioned last week, we're currently on an international break for the women's game. That means Reading FC Women are next in action on December the 11th. That's on Sky Sports at home, 11:30 a.m. kickoff, in fact, such is the almost crowbarring in of women's football to make sure there is a slot for it. That's December the 11th. We'll obviously give you a reminder of that to get yourself down to the Select Car Leasing Stadium for that one. Under-23s, they lost to Derby 2-1 in the Premier League Cup and drew 1-1 with West Brom this week. Ava Choman with the goal there. They've got next to bottom in the league at the moment, and they face third bottom Middlesbrough at home 7 p.m. at Monday the 29th. Then they've got Norwich on Friday away. The under-18s lost 2-1 to Blackburn. They've got Norwich next in their third bottom of their league, so not too great there, but you can keep up to date with all those teams. Match reports going online for the women's and under-23s team on the Tilehurst End website this season, so definitely get on that. Keep up to date with what's going on. Also, Ben, I know you want to talk about a quick word on the fan-led review that came out this week in terms of the future of football. Already a lot has been said, obviously, from a Premier League perspective and everything. There's a whole raft, I think it's 162 pages document. I've seen bits on it about transfer levies and independent regulators and financial controls, basically. Being a lot of these sort of things that are kind of existing at the moment, but being taken out of the hands of the Premier League and the EFL to an independent body. From a Reading perspective, Ben, how does it all look, and what sort of stuff should Reading fans want to be occurring out of this?
Well, I think there's some quite telling points. I mean, obviously, it's a huge document, which, you know, I'm not going to go into bit by bit, but the kind of the key areas really were just thinking about the, you know, the distribution of funds from the top down, and without sounding like Gary Neville, you know, we all know that there is a lot of money sloshing around at the top end of football at the moment, and that kind of needs to be filtered down, not just to the Championship, but all the way down to grassroots. You know, this kind of chasing the golden goose business model, if you can call it that, is not sustainable for clubs, as we found out. You know, spent far too much money and not got anywhere with it. Same with a lot of other clubs. And I think, you know, our current predicament will probably force the EFL to uncover other clubs that have gone down that route, really. But you know, the key thing really was kind of thinking about the supporting of fan-led organisations in terms of ownership, in terms of voting at football clubs, and having a situation where it's not just a constant you're being done to as a football fan. You know, there's a lot of clubs recently that have had their badges changed. You know, a couple of years ago they tried to sort of change with Hull, and the fans said no, but there's very little that fans can do at the moment, because they're at the mercy of these kind of owners that have the purse strings. So there's a lot of things in there, really, and making sure that kind of fans are at the heart of what goes on at their football clubs, thinking about the way that kind of the rules are brought in and voted on, and kind of the reform of the FA board, where, you know, we're thinking about not just having the top clubs represented, but you know, representatives from all over the football pyramid, which I think would be a real positive thing. And just making sure that, you know, we're not in a situation where, and this is the whole point of the fan-led review, is that they don't want to lose another club to financial difficulties or, you know, lack of interest. They want the money to be able to support these clubs through difficult times, as we've seen in the last 18 months to 2 years. So there's a lot of things to digest, and Star are kind of looking through that at the moment and kind of working through. I know that the couple of board members are on a Zoom with Tracy Crouch earlier in the week, who was the MP that led it all. And their kind of view was that she was really positive. So there's loads on there, but they were the kind of the key points, really, and that will now kind of continue to trickle down. But the key thing really is that the review's been done. It's now up to the government and the kind of the sporting authorities to act upon it and actually, you know, embed that and make those changes possible. So yeah, there's a lot of positives, but there's still a long way to go to make it into what kind of lower league fans all want to see, really.
Yeah, I did see also during the week that, or maybe this was a couple of weeks ago, that the Premier League has signed an absolutely bumper new TV rights deal with the US market, which is like almost the numbers involved are just ridiculous. And then you also go and see the Premier League chief executive saying that if they were to hand out more cash to the Football League, it would be a disaster, which I just don't personally understand how you can claim such a thing, that we need all the cash sort of mentality. But that, you know, it's For ourselves, the Star and Ben, who's obviously heavily involved in it, definitely something. If you have any thoughts on it, to definitely get involved in Star and to kind of bring those out. And obviously, Tyler Sten will be tracking it and keeping an eye on it, and definitely want to be part of the conversation for it. And any type of fan involvement in running the club always gets us one step closer to the Tyler Sten coup of Reading Football Club, which, the revolution will be glorious, let's just put it that way. And with that in mind, let's get involved with Big Match Preview and talk about the game on Saturday against Hull.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Oz!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
So as Dai Young scrambles Chinooks and SWAT teams to burst in through my window after saying that, let's go through what's going on for Reading on the week. I've actually got a midweek off when I think a lot of Premier League, it's a round of Premier League matches this midweek, which unusually hasn't coincided with the Championship game. So we've got a midweek off, which I'm certainly very happy for. Hull at home, Saturday, December 4th, 3 p.m. And Marco, this is one that Reading fans probably look at the fixture list and think, oh, that's a cracking easy 3 points, that. But Hull are even more inconsistent than us, really. And their current inconsistency means that they've won 4 in a row. So, you know, they've not played massively good teams in that, but this isn't necessarily going to be a walk in the park.
Well, being a Reading supporter, I think they're never really easy games for us, at least in the recent seasons. Like I said before, I think, and I listened also to an interview from Pauno after Saturday's match, when he said that this week will be crucial because, like you said before, there's no game during the week, so he has time to work with the team. There are no players out on with international duties, so he got the squad together, at least the fit players, and so it will be important to get out of this week and to use this week to get the whole team forward, and so it won't definitely be an easy game like we've seen before. I mean, I think the performance against Forest was okay. Couldn't criticize the team that much, whereas Sheffield was a real low point. And then again, it's a bit of a roller coaster ride now, always up and down. And so, like we've said before already, the consistency will be crucial, especially in that period right now where we go into the Christmas weeks around Christmas, many games shortly after each other. So it's important we get that consistency right before the Christmas period, in my opinion. And so I had the feeling that before the Swansea trip that it was a real, real, real important game. And so I was over the moon after seeing us win and the way we performed, and the same will be for the Hull game. So it's real, real big match for us, which we will hopefully win. And I think that a win after that week, like I said before, where Paolo's able to train with the whole squad, that will be very, very important for us getting into December as games and to get some consistency in our performance.
Certainly will be to get that training ground week in. And looking at it, Ben, I think the thing to note about Hull, looking at their last 6 games, they've not had the bulk of possession in any of those games. So quite realistically, they're going to come and, you know, not sit in and hope out for a point or anything, but they're not going to come and dominate possession kind of like Swansea did. Maybe they're going to come and be confident because they're on a good form, but they're not going to demand that we kind of, you know, or they're not going to give us loads of space in behind and demand that we sit in and hold on while they dominate possession. They're going to be pretty confident in letting us have much of the ball and letting us kind of make inroads and everything. And Is that going to suit us? We did quite well against Swansea on the counter. Against Sheffield United, we had no idea what to do against a team which had most of the possession. Against Forest, we kind of had most of the ball, but they scored really early. You know, Birmingham, we managed to do okay having most of the ball. Is this going to suit us, or are we going to find ourselves in a typical scenario of turning up to a home game against a team that isn't very high in the table and then almost finding ourselves being kind of tactically outdone?
Well, I mean, you know, the key thing really is whether or not he keeps the same 11 in the same formation as yesterday, barring any injuries. I've always been of the mindset that you don't change a winning team, but, you know, you change formation to suit the team you're playing. Hull have hit form at exactly the wrong time for us, really. You know, as you said, they've won 4 the last 6 games, you know, 4 in a row at that. Had a good result yesterday against, you know, Millwall side that are looking upwards rather than down. Even being pegged back to 1-1, they still managed to get the win. And they're playing football again. And you know, after their horrific start, they're moving up the table. I mean, you know, we'd lost yesterday. This would be a massive game, and we'd have the whole week kind of, you know, nervous apprehension of leading up to it. yesterday kind of lightened the mood a little bit, obviously with the win, but it's still a massive game. And we have to, if we want to do anything this season of note, we have to start winning these type of games at home. You know, we got a reasonable result against Forest on, you know, last Saturday. Terrible, obviously, midweek against a team that I felt we should have won. No offence to Sheffield United. But, you know, we need now a little bit of arrogance in this team, and we need to kind of start making, you know, the Mad Stad, Carl Easton Stadium, whatever, a place where teams are fearful of coming. And that's not going to happen overnight. But we have to start winning these games and start setting down, this is how we play at home, this is how we set ourselves up, and this is how we're going to go about our business and try to get the 3 points. It's going to be difficult to do that, obviously. You know, they're all difficult games in this league. But I really hope that we have got enough about us. And as Marco said, having a week on the training pitch will help us with that to kind of go out and get the win. We've just got to be on the front foot from the off, you know, not concede early, which we've done far too many times this season. And it's really, really frustrating when that happens, because we're always putting ourselves on the back foot. And just go after them and just from the off attack, push them back, get players high up the pitch and pressure them into kind of making the mistakes, really. But I'm hopeful. We're always hopeful. Maybe that's the downfall here, that we can get a result.
Well, let's talk predictions then. Apologies that I don't have an update on the Prediction League with me at the moment, because I'm currently on a different machine to what I'm usually recording on, so I don't have the Excel spreadsheet with me. But let's go predictions then. Marco, what are you saying for this one?
Well, I think it will be a very tight game, not that spectacular as the one against Swansea. So I would go for a 1-0 win after scoring a goal after a corner with a header. So without being able to create that many chances as we had at Swansea. So, yeah, I would go for a 1-0 win. And even though our performance might not have been that spectacular like against Swansea, I would be very happy with that win.
I'm going to go 2-1 to Reading, in the sense that we score, I think we'll score relatively early on. I think we will come out pretty confident and show off some new moves, and then perhaps maybe be able to pick one up in the second half on the counter before Hull score for a nervy finish. What are you thinking, Ben?
Yeah, I was going to go 1-0 as well. I'd just settle for a nice, straightforward 1-0 victory, which means that the absolute opposite will now happen. But I just want us to see a game out. I want us to be in control, and I'd love a clean sheet. That's probably been really greedy, but I just want us to get through the game with the win, however that comes. But prediction-wise would be 1-0 to us.
Well, I think a 1-0 scoreline probably means that the last 10-15 minutes at least might not be too straightforward, but I know how you mean, a clean sheet. And Hull are not big scorers. You know, they've been winning these games, but they've been winning like 1-0 and 2-1 and stuff. So it's not... certainly not beyond the realms of possibility for Reading to pull it off this week. And well, we're recording on Sunday night, but this is going up on Monday afternoon, so we'll be back after the whole game, because we've got just a little bit of a break before the kind of Christmas madness. It's kind of being more inflicted upon the top teams rather than the likes of Reading, the kind of massively busy Christmas period. So we'll be back after the whole game for the next episode of the podcast. Thank you, as always, Marco, for coming on. And it is great to hear that you were down at the SCLS for the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. And yeah, always a pleasure, and enjoyed it as much as before.
And Ben, thanks very much for coming on this evening.
No problem at all, mate. Nice to talk to you, Marco, and have a good week, everybody. And let's fingers crossed for a win on Saturday.
Absolutely. Let's hope that Reading can pull it off and go from being that inconsistent team that surprises you with the occasional away win to being that consistent team that can pick up those home wins that everyone's been craving. It's certainly been, you know, it's certainly been a very up and down season so far. But let's just hope that with that sort of madness that we're talking about, the sort of weird, almost unnecessary silliness of going and celebrating like with the corner flag away to Swansea and Andy Carroll tearing it up front and Danny Drinkwater scoring and all this sort of stuff, all this sort of mayhem that follows certain teams around for a little bit. Let's hope it can just push Reading towards another 3 points on Saturday and make sure that any kind of relegation fears aren't really too much on our mind as we get into the Christmas period. Thank you very much for listening. We'll be back, as I say, next week after the whole game. And as always, come on, you arse.